Good morning to you all. We are starting our virtual lesson. A few announcements. There'll be a few lectures in New York, conducted by Moti in Manhattan. I hope to see many, many more groups here on my screen, and we hopefully will move forward, advance as quickly as possible, and the more of us will be indulged in studying Kabbalah, the faster we will achieve our goal. The goal is clear, and our way to the goal is clear. And when you look at all the events, all the recent events, you can see them from above, and they are sure to have helped you to understand things, and your outlook will be more serious, and your attitude will become more thoughtful. And I hope that gradually we'll understand that we won't be able to understand our next state, and we'll work out a correct attitude to it. Gradually we learn to treat it as by faith above reason. And till then, we'll have to go through many Rishimot, and it will appear in us. There's going to be a number of events in Lithuania. Yelizarov is flying there. There'll be quite a few seminars in Estonia and Lithuania. We are expecting a producer, the one who lives in Belgium and plans to work on a feature film with ideas integrated, Kabbalistic ideas integrated in the film. Whoever wants to order English language cassettes can contact Uri in Toronto and order them. Last time, we started Baal Salam's article, Ashalom, the peace, where he tells us how out of our experience we can arrive at the necessity of spiritual work. And he touched upon the contradiction which is present in the supreme control over men. This control influences us constantly, it acts only through our senses, through mind. And if people are on the level of the still vegetative and animal nature levels, they all exist under the strict, rigid, unchanging natural laws. But the more a person develops, then the more dubious becomes nature attitude towards man. When a human being is born and is still young, everything is provided, he is provided with everything in order to develop in a kind and good way until he becomes a grown-up person. It's natural that in our time we can't observe it exactly like that. But this natural control is absolutely kind in order to lead man to maturity. And then suddenly nature starts to demand a lot from man, sends him suffering. We see how we can't cope with our egoistical traits, with our pride that destroys everything around us. The surrounding world, as it were, becomes more evil towards us. And the more we develop technically, technologically, and we call it progress, and that's a question, whether it's progress, the more we see that though our life becomes longer and we become more adapted to the conditions, half of the planet's population suffer from hunger instead of 90% as before, and the nature treats us in correspondence with our development, as if pressing us to understand something, to realize something. We still don't know what exactly. And this is the result that we hope to get as a result of studying this article. But meanwhile, Baha'u'llah Salam leads us through a search for answers that humanity has been looking for throughout its history. The philosophers critically researching nature and the universe, they noticed that there is a certain period in man's life, the first period of his life, when he is still young, when nature treats him well, and then it changes direction, changes its attitude when a man becomes grown up. So throughout the history of mankind, they formulated many theories. By the way, I used to ask why we have to discuss all these theories and other people ask me about it. First of all, if Baha'u'llah Salam writes about it, then we have to understand that whatever the Kabbalist writes, he writes from his spiritual level. So if he said something or did something, even if it seems to us strange or a pure chance and unnecessary, maybe incorrect, it's all determined by the level, by the spiritual level he is on. Even if it looks like a mistake to us, some slight error, or maybe influence of some special mood, we have to understand that he writes from the level he is on, and it should be absolutely sacred, because it comes from the very, very exalted level, and we will have to spend a lot of time in order to get there. And once we are there, we'll think absolutely like he does. So the content is irrelevant. We just receive information from the level which we aspire for. We discussed a few theories, a theory of nature, a theory of dualism, about an evil and good forces, then polytheism, and the fourth one, abandoning the control of the world. That's how we treat the world. We use all these theories in a combination or separately. Sometimes we think that many, many sources influence us. And at other times I think about two forces affecting me, the evil, the good and the evil one. And I can't say that the Creator's control has cause and effect connections. And it's irrelevant that this theory sprang up a very long time ago. So we discussed them all, and now we'll proceed. Bhagavatam writes, however, the world is governed by all these laws. And this contradiction in nature's control over children and grown-ups is innate in us, whereas nature treats children very gently, kindly, and grown-ups very cruelly, severely. And this contradiction does not diminish. On the contrary, it increases. So we don't see how we can save ourselves. How can we, why can't we live in a kind, good world as children do? And in spite of all the attempts on the part of humanity, Bhagavatam asks, maybe there is no sense in asking for correction of this contradiction. Maybe this correction is in our hands. So perhaps, the author says, the control is chosen by us. We determine it. There's no certain plan or attitude on the part of nature towards us. Nature automatically treats us in the measure of our a corrected or unimproved state. There is a law of equilibrium. If we do not abide by this law on the level of on a human level, then consequently nature treats us from the other side of this law. We think that nature is intelligent and should correct us. Vasudevan says that we have to abide by the strict laws, and when we violate these laws, nature tries to correct our way. So, our attitude to natural laws should be very thoughtful and careful. We have to think and ask why nature treats us so badly, so cruelly. By nature, I mean the entire universe and the force governing it on all levels, on mental, moral, psychological, psychic levels of his existence. So the next chapter calls for the careful and thoughtful approach to natural laws. We all understand, even on a simple level, that man has to live in a society. In other words, he cannot exist outside of society and supply himself with all means of existence. If we see, for example, that some loner leaves his place and becomes a lonely person living somewhere in a forest, and he can't provide himself with the necessary basic means of existence. He put himself in a situation where he does not contribute anything to a society, and the society naturally does not help him. So he can hardly survive in those conditions. It's a necessity to be inside a society, be supported by the people around you. On a physical level, we more or less understand it, but we disagree to give to the society and receive from it equally. But what do we have to do on other levels, mental, psychological, spiritual? How can I run away from society, and in what relationship I am in with the society? Maybe if I am in a state of equilibrium with society on all levels, maybe I'll feel very comfortable and feel very good and benevolent influences. He speaks out of experience. We're not discussing some exalted goal that we have to reach. We're speaking about this earthly level of our existence. Meanwhile, we are confined to the level of this world. We have to realize that we have to be in a state of a certain equilibrium with our society. So if man distances himself from the society and then starts cursing his destiny, he discovers his own stupidity, and he shouldn't be complaining himself or others in his troubles. Maybe we also, without distancing, physically distancing ourselves from our society, we become remote from the society in our actions of receiving and giving, and that's why we suffer. Nature prepared man a special place, like it prepared a place for fetus in a mother's womb. So nature prepared a society, his surroundings, for a man, and it changes it. And in correspondence to the development of man. Maybe we harm the society, and that's why we suffer. So the question is to create, to organize a correct society, and there's no justification for fleeing to some deserted places. If we knew how to exist in a society, would be able to organize the right kind of society, we would exist in a most wonderful way, in a most comfortable and safe state, every minute feeling absolute comfort. So people who do it should not complain. When man detaches himself from the correct society, he is lost. This is on a physical level. And I can add to it on a religious level. By religious level, he means a Kabbalistic level. He wrote this article in the 30s of the 20th century, 1927-1930, and addressed the religious public, Orthodox religious Jews of Israel at that time. So the entire text is adapted to the perception of those people, so that it will be taken easily by all those masses. He wrote the article for. So I can formulate it as follows. Since the control comes from the Creator, and no doubt there is a goal in all his actions, then violating the laws of nature, we harm the goal, because the entire nature is built based on these laws. And if we didn't violate these laws, we would be living in an absolute comfort. There are only two actions between us and the surrounding world, giving and receiving. We would always choose the optimal action. But only in case we could know this universal natural law. So we can't be sorry for a man who violates the laws of nature and does not serve these goals. So our only problem is to understand that we are all lost in the desert, detached from the correct society. We are outside of these correct bounds, and then this outer law, kind law of controlling nature, and a human as the most sensitive element of it. This law treats us by its backside, opposite side, in order to throw evil, in order to get us back on track. I think the author writes that nobody should argue with me, because the essence of this law is only one, no matter how we describe it, scientifically, religiously, or in a metaphoric language. The arguments are not in understanding of the Creator. What is the difference if we speak about the Creator as an existing, feeling, thinking, intelligent, planning, being, or we speak about nature as a rigid, strict law which acts upon us in accordance with our behavior? Similar to the law of gravity. So the same as with all other laws concerning moral, mental, our relationships within society. They are included in one universal law. But in the measure of our violating this law, we feel its negative influence. To the degree of abiding by this law, we immediately feel its positive influence. And it doesn't matter how we express it, how we describe it, how we call it the Creator, nature, or whatever. So all those who violate this law are worthy of punishment, and it's even desirable to punish such person, and nobody should be sorry for him. Why? They know when we are sorry for people who violate laws, we also go against this law. The one who is not correcting himself and becomes wiser, on the contrary, he is continuing to sin, to violate the rigid, strict laws. It refers to our judicial system, our social services. We have no way of knowing how to organize man's activities so that he would receive the maximal correction on the part of nature, so that he would be living in a perfect comfort and advance towards his best, optimal state. There's only one contradiction in people's opinions, only in a motive. There is a law of gravity, for example, whereas every object is gravitates towards the ground. And the laws on a human level, whatever is above the animal level in us, let's draw it on the blackboard so that it will be clearer to us. We have the following levels of nature: the still level, the vegetative level, animal level of nature. Above it follows man, which includes also the still vegetative and animal levels. This bottom part is the surrounding world, and this top part is man. So man also includes these four levels: the still, vegetative, animal, and human inside him. And we said that up to the level, the animal level inside a man, there's still vegetative animal in the surrounding world, and there's still a vegetative and animal inside man are unchanging. They are static, and nature treats them constantly in an unchanging way. Only the human level in man is subject to change. These changes take place in his egoism, in man's egoism. We drew a graph throughout human history. Man goes through the years of his development from zero, which is 5,763 years ago, a point in the heart started forming. Since that day, we count our existence. It's not the Jewish calendar, actually. It started in the ancient Mesopotamia. Even before that, humanity was developing, but this zero point signifies a point in time when the first point in man's heart appeared. According to our Jewish calendar and the Gregorian calendar, the date is 1995. From this point, the mass development, the spreading circulation of Kabbalah begins, 5,755, according to the Jewish calendar. Here, the zero point, I write Abraham, the reception of the Kabbalistic method, and from Abraham until our time, it was an inner development. The Kabbalists were preparing this method. This line had to ascend to a certain critical level when the masses would arrive at such level of egoism. The goal is to make man's egoism equal to the Creator. So only this part in man, which is developing in his ego, is developing throughout man's history. So nature's attitude is constant, static towards the preceding levels, and to the level, human level in man, is treated by nature in accordance with his development. So man starts from point zero, and in each of his incarnations he again starts from a relative zero, and in accordance with his level of development, nature treats him. So Baha'i Sulam writes that everybody admits that the one who violates natural law is worthy of punishment. It's even desirable to punish such a person, because it's a way to correct us to search for better ways. For solving our problems within the society. In order not to be using two names, the creator or nature, because there's no difference in how we call it. It doesn't matter for us at all. So it's better to go deep into a comparison and accept Kabbalists' opinion, whereas numerical value of the word the creator is equal to the word nature. Let's take the word teva, nature in Hebrew, and the word Elohim, which is the creator. The gematria, numerical values of Hebrew letters, will give us 9, 2, and 70, 130, 6, 5, 10. So we'll see that numerically are equal to each other. 86.
Законы природы, законы Творца можно назвать заповедями природы и наоборот, так как это то же самое. И не зачем пустословить.
Then we can call the natural laws, give them the name of commandments. Yeah, I had to add a letter hey here. It should be 86, the word deva, nature.
То есть, что этим доказывают каббалисты, что Элоким равно тева. Элоким это название.
So what do the Kabbalists try to prove here by comparing these two words, their numerical values, nature and the creator? Гальгальда Инаим. Symbolized by Mem and Yud, and Ahab, Ozen Chotem Peh, consists of let's put it, let's write it down here. Elohim. Aleph, Lamed, and this is Vav here. What he means is that the spiritual Kli is called Elohim, consists of 10 Sferot. It's a manifestation of the Creator in the creation. And the same thing is called nature. Nothing else. So the expression of the Creator in a correct vessel is called nature. So it's irrelevant how we call the surrounding nature, the Creator, or just nature. Banasaram wants to tell us that we have to treat this law as a goal. It is ever changing inside us. And the changes of the surrounding nature influencing us is very purposeful. The human level in us is ever changing and has to achieve a certain goal. And instead of arguing about these two names, because there is no difference between them. We better start discussing the two words Teva and Elohim, nature and the Creator, and see that numerically they are equal. You see how Baal Salam takes Kabbalah out of all influences of religion and wants to make it a science about human development. And if we agree that the Creator and nature are one and the same thing, then the laws of nature can be called commandments. There's no distinction between them. And now it's very important to have a look at those commandments, at those laws of nature. And why does it punish us so ruthlessly? And what can we do in order to avoid this punishment? We already mentioned that man has to live in a society. If you flee from it, then you are subjected to the conditions when you can hardly survive. And the laws that oblige us to live inside society, how does nature oblige us from the point of view of the society? If you look at any society, you'll see that we have to observe two laws, two commandments that can be defined as Kabbalah and Ashpa'ah, reception and giving. Each member of society is obliged by nature to receive everything from his society, but also has to work for it and give to it. So create a certain equilibrium between himself and the society. Initially, it was designed by nature on the still vegetative and animal levels. On a human level, this equilibrium wasn't set. We have to observe it independently. We don't fulfill the basic law existing in nature of equal giving and receiving. And this is the reason of all our problems. Why do we feel ourselves in this state and not billions of times better, which we would call the feeling of eternity and perfection? So failure to observe this law makes me such a feeble and dying creature. And therefore, if we don't observe even one of these commandments in receiving and giving, we are punished by nature. And this is the real reason of human sufferings, which suffers more than all other created beings. We don't need too many observations concerning giving and receiving. I can take too much from society. The society will punish me. Another question, whether society punishes me correctly. It's like a child receiving everything from his environment, and nobody punishes It's trying to create the best conditions for child's development. We built all kinds of institutions, all kinds of sports activities, and do it in the most comfortable way for them, as much as our resources allow us to do that. So our children may receive almost limitlessly, but the grown-ups, unfortunately, maybe fortunately, cannot behave as children do. If he tries to do that, he will be punished immediately. So, according to the commandment about receiving, reception, the punishment is immediate. It may be wrong, but man is obviously limited by the laws of the society. But concerning the second law of giving to the society, whereas the punishment never comes, man asks, what should I be punished for? Because I don't work 20 hours, work only 2 hours, in this or that place. I receive, and that's enough. Why should I be punished? Man doesn't give anything to society. It doesn't matter if he doesn't receive anything. His giving, his contribution to his society, so we cannot imagine, do not imagine this law of giving. Bala Salam writes that we know how to take, how to receive. When a child takes something from the table without permission, nobody does anything. But when a grown-up takes something that does not belong him, he is put in prison and is punished for that. And with regards to the giving to the society, there are no attempts on the part of the society, but we also don't see any punishment on the part of nature. And hence we do not observe this law at all. So what do we have here? There is a law of bestowal, of giving. This is myself, and this is the society I live in. The law of receiving from society is based on a visible, obvious punishment. If I want to receive more than I deserve. In giving, there is no punishment on the part of the society. This is an obvious, visible punishment from the society. And the invisible one, not obvious, from nature, or the creator, doesn't matter. Here, the part of giving, the law of giving, the punishment from the society is absent, and the punishment on the part of the creator is also invisible, not obvious to us. So it turns out that the law of receiving, of reception, is observed by the society, but is observed incorrectly. Since we don't see the right, the correct way of observing it, and this part of giving is unknown to us, neither from the part of the society nor from the Creator. So we see that there is no equilibrium between a man and the society, between a man and the surrounding world, between the part, which is the human part in us. Our ego is not corrected by the surrounding world. And this is the whole problem. We are unaware of the laws of giving and feel no consequence, no punishment, no correction on the part of nature. So until our eyes open and we see this law and understand that if I don't give to the society, I harm myself. Until I feel it tangibly, the problem will persist. I won't be able to control my life, my destiny. And therefore, humanity is being roasted, and hunger and misfortunes and catastrophes will never let it leave us alone, because nature is like a professional referee, a judge that punishes us efficiently. Because in the process of technological progress, our misfortunes only grow. The natural law treats us in accordance of the growth of our egoism. If it grows, we don't compensate it with our correct behavior. In that measure, nature treats us cruelly. So, natural law is designed in such a way that it obliges us to give, so that no one of us would diminish his efforts in trying to working for. Don't think about achieving this condition immediately. We're not going back to building socialism or communism or to the times of Stalin. We are speaking about the spiritual law which governs all nature. And later we'll see how it should be observed in our world. It should be quite natural, and it should be absolutely different from what we have seen. But we hear it in those same definitions, terms that we so much resent. So the law of nature is the law of precise equilibrium between giving and receiving. And until we learn to observe this law, the nature will continue to punish us, to press us, because we contradict to the basic law of nature. So we call upon ourselves the deformation of this law and calls forth sufferings instead of comfort in us. And by the blows that we receive at our times, we have to think about a sword which is above our head and have to come to the right conclusions. As a result, nature will win, will defeat us, and as one, we'll have to observe all its laws in a full measure. So it's better for us to learn how we can do it, become Kabbalists, those who accept the real, genuine laws of nature and observe them, the people that live in quite a different universe, unlike people who do not understand or feel it. So everything depends on our adaptation to the surrounding world. Nothing else. That's why a Kabbalist is a person who reveals the existing reality around him and quite obviously starts to feel the laws of the Creator's control.
Hello?
I have somebody talking to me on the line from Moscow. Somebody obviously wants to ask a question.
Hello? Moscow?
Hello, Moscow?
Hello? Я слышал, что у вас есть какие-то вопросы срочные. У нас сейчас есть уже появляется вопрос.
I hear you have some urgent questions.
Мы надеемся, что такой вид связи будет не только с вами.
We hope that this kind of connection will be established with all groups, not only with you. Unfortunately, we are connected thus only with you. In a short time, we'll communicate with New York and San Francisco. The first one to ask the question is Dr. Makaron. Good morning to all.